Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is March 28, 2012. I believe this is show number 20 with our co-host, Dr. Adil Kasim, MD. He's a fourth-generation homeopath, and he has been involved in the homeopathic community with his entire generation of families, 105 years in practically every facet of homeopathic system, professional practice, developing clinics and hospitals, homeopathic research, academics, business, even manufacturing, and of course, propagating homeopathy around the world. He has a brand new website called www.homeoacad.org. HOMEOACAD.org. It is pretty fancy, a bright orange color running across with a lot of things to view and study. And he has a postgraduate residential training school and many, many other obligations. And that is why in the recent weeks he has not been available to do the show. Today is a special day for him to come on. And I'm hoping that he realizes we have changed the clocks in the United States to daylight savings. And so if he is late today, if he gets this message to come on to the show, we're going to be looking forward to him talking to us about the rubrics for the chest chapter in Kent's repertory. And so as homeopaths, we understand that when we take a case, we gather so much different information about the individual, about their unique qualities, their sensations, their feelings, things that they have had over the course of history, or something that is new that has cropped up. And so I've got my book open, my Kent repertory, to the chapter in chest. And obviously, and strangely enough, not only does it have information about the heart, but it also includes about the mammae, about the breaths, about the bones in the heart, about feelings of constriction, distension, and different qualities of pain. And it even talks about shocks to the body and strange, rare, and peculiar things such as feeling smoke, as if there is smoke in the chest, and what to do about these things when people come up with very interesting qualities. And I'm going to check again with Dr. Adil during the show to see if he comes on. In the meantime, I would like to tell you a little bit about some new things that have been going on with Homeopathy World Community and our creating waves of awareness. On Monday of this week, we began a brand new show with co-host Dr. Deepak Sharma talking about dreams of snakes. And that was just the first topic. We'll have many, many more topics on Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, USA, where people can come on and chat with us live via the telephone to talk or via Skype. And we will be broadcasting this live video show. You can find it on Homeopathy World Community simply by going to the main page and clicking the top banner, which we have on there right now. So each of the shows that are videotaped can be seen as an archive. We had so far over 600 views from our very first show, and that was tremendously exciting. I'd also like to let folks know that we have a calendar of events posted on Homeopathy World Community. And for those who are Homeopathy World Community members, you need to put on the HWC banner on the linked page so people recognize the affiliation and partnership between all of the homeopathic community and how we support one another. We support each other by tweeting, by sharing our blogs on our many, many websites, by interacting both on Homeopathy World Community Network and on Facebook and other networks. Upcoming also is the National Center for Homeopathy annual conference, and there is still time for people to get in on this incredible adventure and opportunity to study and learn and talk to experts in the field. We also have on Homeopathy World Community a weekly news digest, and because of all the obligations, it's coming out late this week, might even skip this week and go on to next week, where we highlight one of our members. And last week, we highlighted Dr. Prasad Arvind Rasal, who has been practicing the classical Hahnemannian method of homeopathy for 19 years. And while we study classical homeopathy, there's also a lot going on in the modern day of homeopathy, including all of our new teachers and what they bring into practice, what they have learned. And he learned the revolutionized homeopathy method of Dr. Seagal of India. And this is really fascinating to take into consideration all of the mind and mental rubrics into a high regard and interpret them and see how they can bring to the foreground a pertinent remedy that can help to heal the person's symptoms, whether they be physical, emotional, or mental. So I encourage you to take a look at the news digest and find out what is new and exciting. We also have many wonderful homeopaths in the community who contribute so much that they learn and find interesting. We have Dr. Dushyant Kamal Dari, who is really a wonderful help on Twitter as well, but he also posts very frequently in the different places, in the groups that we have, in the forums on Homeopathy World Community. In fact, for him, I created a new forum topic category called Medicinal Plants and Herbs. And you'd learn that Dr. Dushyant loves to investigate herbs and plants and take wonderful photographs of the world around us. And one of his most recent contributions was from the Cucurma longa, which everyone is familiar with, especially in Indian cooking. In the recipes, the turmeric, which is a rhizome Cucurma longa. And this, he says, is great for treating acid, flatulence, or atonic dyspepsia. So when your tummy is upset, when you have things that just don't feel right in your digestion, the turmeric is going to be very, very helpful. He says that it treats peptic ulcers, pain, and inflammation due to rheumatoid arthritis, and of amenorrhea, dysmenorrhea, diarrhea, and epilepsy, pain, and skin diseases. We know that there are very many folk medicines that come into play, and this happens to be one of them. And I just went to the store yesterday and bought some fresh turmeric root. Of course, when I checked out, the lady did not know what it was. She had never seen it before. She didn't even have a price for it. She thought it was a ginger root, and she called over the manager to get a price on it, and even he didn't know what it was. So this, to America, is a really new herb or root that is coming more into the regular traditional grocery stores simply because people are becoming aware of them from the Indian community that lives nearby, and maybe the clamoring for more of these varied fresh roots into the diet of people. So in terms of folk medicine, the turmeric is used to treat asthma, boils, bruises, coughs, dizziness, epilepsy, hemorrhages, insect bites, jaundice, ringworm, urinary calculi, and slow lactation. It seems as if it covers just the spectrum of human behavior and human symptoms. And I'm wondering if perhaps someone has used it for this, how they have prepared the turmeric, for instance, for insect bites. Do they make a concoction of it, or do they do a homeopathic remedy? It seems as if it would be some sort of a prepared application for an insect bite. And again, I have this feeling that Dr. Adel, if you're all waiting to learn about Kent's rubrics, he's probably thinking that the time is different. And whether he gets on or not today, maybe if somebody knows his number, they could call him up and give him a ring and let him know that the time difference in the United States is a little bit different than it is it was previously when we had our last show. A little bit more about the cucurbit longa, which is the turmeric. It has a great deal of anti-inflammatory activity in this rhizome and has been demonstrated in animal models also. The intraperitoneal administration of this drug in rats effectively reduced both acute and chronic inflammation. And in the carrageenan-induced paw edema, in granuloma pouch test, and the cotton pellet granuloma test. So these are three methods that researchers use to test drugs. And someone who has technical expertise could probably explain those testing much better than I could ever do. The effectiveness of the drugs in rats, of course, I always say, rats, are humans the same as rats? No. So why these are pertinent is not always applicable in my mind. I mean, we can get some education and we can learn a little bit about the activity of these herbs. But to me, there's not a one-to-one correlation. One of the animals in the animal kingdom, the pig, is very, very closely related to humans. And I see that it's possible Dr. Adel might be coming on. And so I'm just going to send him a little note that the show is running, and I'm going to check if he's going to try and get on to the show in a few minutes. In the meantime, this is quite interesting about turmeric and the properties that it has for anti-inflammatory agent, especially in the digestive tract, because so many people today have GERD, they have acidity, they have burning, they have diverticulitis, so many, and it also, he seemed to have said, it was related to rheumatism. So we have two things going on that have an interplay together. And with this anti-inflammatory effect, we could see perhaps how it could improve the joint function. So he says from the research studied about turmeric that it is a volatile oil and has exhibited anti-inflammatory activities in rats against adjuvant-induced arthritis, carrageenan-induced paw edema, and, as I said before, there's another kind of yaluror, help me with the spelling of this one, Y-A-L-U-R-O-N-I-D-A-S-E, yaluronidase-induced inflammation. So what researchers do in the lab is they induce some type of inflammatory disease into the test animals, and in this case they used rats, to cause inflammation. And then they apply their testing drug to see if it makes a difference for them. And so they used intraperitoneal administration, sounds like an injection, curcumin and sodium curcuminate exhibited strong anti-inflammatory activities. And they did this in both rats and mice. So you can see that those are two different types of animals. Again, hopefully Dr. Adil will come on. Oh, and you know, in his Skype, he says that he does not want to be disturbed. So it's possible that he might be away today, having some sort of a meeting. Also, it says that curcumin was also found to be effective after oral administration in the acute carrageenan-induced edema test in mice and rats. So we're talking about not only inflammation in this anti-inflammatory activity, but the fact that edema is one of the body's ways of protecting itself, that its fluid goes into the interstitial tissues, the fluid goes into and surrounds the area that is in need of some sort of support from the body. It's the body's own immune system that causes this inflammatory effect and also edema. An anti-inflammatory activity of curcumin may be due to its ability to scavenge oxygen radicals. And we hear a lot about that, getting rid of the radicals that are in the body. When we take our omega-3s and a vitamin C and other kinds of helpful supplements. So they have tried to isolate the special part of the turmeric rather than giving it as a natural herb. And they say also that because you can't eat enough of it, that they would have to give you this supplement. Now they have further information about the activity of peptic ulcer and dyspepsia, which is a really big problem in so much of the population today. They did an oral administration now to rabbits in water and methanol extracts of the drug, which they found significantly decreased the gastric secretions and increased the mucin contents of gastric juice. So we know that to protect the lining of the stomach, there is this mucin, like a mucus, that is protection for the contents in the gastric tract. And so they're saying that the drug that they administered, activated turmeric, significantly decreased the gastric secretion. And this sounds a little bit different from what I have heard personally, that people have problems with their digestive tract because they don't have enough hydrochloric acid. So I'm trying to understand their thinking a little bit about what they want to do. It sounds more like they want to just reduce the amount of acidity. And perhaps people know of other ways to do that. What they did in the experiment was they gave an intragastric administration of ethanol extract of the drug to rats, which is, they say, effectively inhibited the gastric secretion. Does anybody know about ethanol? It sounds like what we put into our gas tank in our automobile. You think that this would be a good thing to do, effective? I'm not sure. I'm going to check the chat here. And we have somebody called Truth Illuminata who has joined us today. He wants to welcome and introduce himself as a 5 years research into natural healing. Yes, I want to thank, we have a good number of guests on the line here today. And I know that we promoted this show, special show today with Dr. Adil because he told me he was going to be on. And I have a feeling that he has just gotten the time wrong since we have changed from to daylight savings time and we're now into spring. So the in India, they may be an hour's time difference. And his Skype says that he's not to be disturbed, so he's probably in a meeting. In the meantime, I'm kind of talking about something quite interesting about turmeric, and if anybody has ways that they have used turmeric either in recipes or they purposely use it. I know I purposely put it in many of my dishes to add color. I put it into my chicken soup to add a rich color and a rich flavor. I add it to stir fry and put it on any kind of baked or anything that goes in the oven or in my pan for stews. Anything that you cook, it always adds some additional healing power. I know that it has high it's a anti-carcinogenic effect as well as these anti-inflammatories. And since we know they have been making some kind of a correlation between inflammation and so many diseases, including cancer, that we are going to see that it's a really good herb, or we can call it a root, that we should use probably daily in our foods, even though the scientists or the pharma tell us that you need to have it in a very high potency, a high supplement quantity. I would personally think, and this is my own opinion, that if you're eating something like this on a regular, weekly, daily basis, that it's going to have a supplemental effect to your body to help you. So we have also the intragastric administration of this ethanol extract, which I kind of questioned myself, but they say that it protected the gastroduodenal mucosa against injuries caused by pyloric ligation, the hyperthermic restraint stress, indomethacin, reserpine, mercaptamine administration, and cytodestructive agents such as 80% methanol and 0.6 molecules per liter of hydrochloric acid. I kind of mentioned that earlier that I thought these are the acids that are naturally occurring in our digestive tract, and also 0.2 moles a liter of sodium hydroxide and 25% sodium chloride, which is our salt. The drug stimulated the production of gastric wall mucus, which that sounds like a really good thing, right? And it restored non-protein sulfides in rats. And I also go back again to say, this is what it does in rats in such and such a proportion in this mode of administration, where we would have to do a lot of testing before it would be approved through the FDA in humans. And that means a lot of clinical trials. Whereas for homeopathic care, we know that These drugs, we do provings on them, and we find out what they do their effects, their drug effects, the medicinal effects in a large proportion of people. And then we are able to tabulate all of those effects and say this drug, whether it's turmeric, and I didn't really look that up in Kent, whether he even has turmeric or how to find that. I probably would have to, I'm looking in my Kent right now in the book to see if they have curcumin, and that's probably what it would be. And if anybody else has their Kent, because that's kind of what we were supposed to be looking at today, what he has listed. And he has cucurbita pepo, which is pumpkin seed, so that's not it. And so if anybody has some information about curcumin or curcumin and how it is related in terms of homeopathic care, that would be really great. We also have that curcumin is one of the anti-inflammatory constituents of the drug. So what researchers in pharmaceutical companies do is they want to find the active element, the active constituent of whatever we're eating, whether it be pumpkin seeds, which I know, I think that has selenium in it, and fish. And so what they do is they take the one little thing that's supposedly active, and then they want to just give it to you as a drug, and then they can make it proprietary, which they make you pay for it, instead of just going to the store and eating a good diet. In the meantime, this curcumin, and some people might, I call it curcumin, it might be curcumin, has been shown to prevent and ameliorate experimentally induced gastric lesions in animal models. So that would be probably ulcers, by stimulation of the mucin production. However, there are conflicting reports regarding the protective action of curcumin against histamine-induced gastric ulceration in guinea pigs. Okay, so they've tried it in mice, in rats, in rabbits, and now in guinea pigs. Moreover, both the intraperitoneal and oral administration of the curcumin, and it is at 100 milligrams per kilogram, have been reported to induce gastric ulceration in rats. So what they're saying, this might be called approving in homeopathic form, is if they give this oral administration of the particular drug that they have isolated, the curcumin, it actually causes gastric ulceration. So then they have nonspecific inhibition of the smooth muscle contractions in the isolated guinea pig ileum by sodium curcuminate has been reported. So now they take the drug, they take the isolate, the curcuminate, and they add it to the salt, to the sodium, and they say nonspecific inhibition of the smooth muscle contractions. And so we know that to digest food, we need to have the action of the digestive tract. And they're saying, I'm not exactly sure whether it is inhibiting it or not. The effect of the curcumin on intestinal gas. So here's another aspect that people are always taking Mylanta or some mints or something to help with gas. I know in India, you might eat some fennel seeds after the meal. This is a really natural way of helping your digestion. Even licorice is really great for gas. And so it says that the curcumin on intestinal gas formation has been demonstrated in vitro and in vivo. Addition to the curcumin to Clostridium perfringens of intestinal origin in vitro and to a chickpea flour diet fed to rats led to a gradual reduction in gas formation. So we might think chickpea which is hummus that we eat. It's a popular food now around the world, not just in the Middle East. A chickpea could very easily cause gas formation. And so they're saying that they have added a diet to the rats. And I don't know whether rats would normally eat chickpeas. So, you know, where they get their concepts and ideas for creating these kinds of experiments, I'm not really sure. Dr. Adil, are you there? Oh, my goodness. I don't know how long you've...
But...
Hello there. I have no idea how long you've been waiting. I didn't see you.
I've been waiting for my time since a long time.
Nobody told me. I tried to find you on Skype, and you have...
I was a bit late, but then I am here at last.
Oh, thank goodness. It says do not disturb on your Skype, so I thought that we missed the time completely. But I have been talking about about curcumin, and I don't know whether you found it interesting or not, but I kind of question all the time what researchers are doing to isolate certain active ingredients in our natural foods and find them and make them into proprietary drugs.
Well, huge amount of research is being done throughout the world. And lots need to be done because there are millions of things which we have not unearthed yet. So synthetic products will go on and go on. And today, actually, I was talking with one of my medical representatives of one of the companies, and we came on to a subject which is nanotechnology. So the future medicine, allopathic medicine, basically would belong to nanotechnology, and surgery would belong to nanorobots, what we call as surgery bots. I mean, they would be so small, and they would be able to inject inside and eat away the precise cancer cells or precise plaques, atherosclerotic plaques. So that would be the future, most probably.
Okay, and do you think this is a good direction? I mean, maybe it is.
Maybe it is. I mean, the era which we are living in, I mean, from big, huge supercomputers, the chip has gone down to such a small, right inside your phone, and your phone has become a computer. No one could have thought that. So why not with medicine? But then medicine would be so individualized. We don't know the repercussions. But then genes, genetic testing, right from the molecule level, that is what future medicine, allopathic medicine, at least it is. Homeopathy would remain dynamic, will remain dynamic, and hopefully we would progress that way.
Yes, so homeopathy has a very strong foundation in fundamental principles and universal principles. And, I think we're learning much more about the medicinal properties and how to find the right remedies for the individual. The nanotechnology really scares me because we're playing with nature, and I just don't know that people know the repercussions of their actions. And we've seen that both environmentally in the way we use drugs and pesticides and insecticides and the mentality of killing.
When a human plays God, then things are bound to happen.
Yes. So I'm very excited to learn more in depth about Kent's chest rubrics. And so I will let you teach us. And I'm go ahead. Get started.
Why I chose this book, I mean, it's a bit technical. It's okay for homeopaths, but I've seen many homeopaths in India, at least. They can't relate they study the Kent's repertory in the college days, but when it comes to practice, very few people actually use those rubrics in practice. And I have found Kent's repertory to be the standard repertory and all the wonderful repertories. It's a precursor to Robin Murphy's repertory, but then wonderful repertory even in acute cases, be it in ICU practice. And general routine chronic cases, yes, it's wonderful. But somehow, today's need is to update Kent's repertory, the language of Kent's repertory, in today's modern literature, at least the diseases in which certain rubrics occur or the symptomatologies occur. Because nowadays, people are very much aware of the name of the diseases, but very few are aware that certain rubrics or these symptoms exist. So, for example, the first rubric which we take in chest is anxiety. Anxiety is the first rubric, evening, night, air open, fine. But anxiety, heart region of, there are so many people who complain at the onset of a heart attack. They would complain not of chest pain proper. They would not complain of choking sensation, but they would just complain of a discomfort in the chest or an anxious feeling or anxiety feeling or restlessness, particularly located in the chest, what people would refer as cardiac neurosis. So, and we have got a host of medicines numbering, say, up to 53 medicines, ranging from aconite to antimtar to arsenic to Auramed, Belladonna, and Camphor, and Carbovec. Now, yes, there are numerous medicines available in this rubric, anxiety, heart region of. But one of the most frequently they are used is aconite, if it's of sudden onset, obviously, as we know. If the patient is in a failure state, I mean in congestive cardiac failure, and there's a rattling of chest, then aconite is not lesser use, and antimtar is of greater use for this very feeling. If there's a generalized restlessness along with restlessness of the region of the heart, then arsenic would be the drug of choice. When the blood pressure is quite low, and this frequently happens in inferior wall myocardial infarction, and patient frequently would complain of chest pain, would complain of a simple feeling like a gastritis and a anxiety feeling in the chest, and then that is the time when we give Camphor or Carbovec, either or. If there's a cyanotic tinge, then Carbovec more. If it's only fallen blood pressure with a restlessness or anxiety in chest in the heart region of, then it is Camphor. And I have saved one of the first cases I remember in 1996 or 7, I had saved was with Camphor, inferior wall MI, myocardial infarction. 82 years old gentleman had complained to me, and I had used this drug and this rubric, and his life was saved.
Can you repeat again, which rubric did you use to find it?
Camphor. Now, there are so many drugs, like anxiety, heart region of, there are so many drugs in 3 marks. Aconite, antimtar, arsenic, Auramed, Belladonna, Camphor, Carbovec, Senkoris, Ipecac, Ignitia, Calmia, how many and which to use? So,
exactly.
A quick review would be, if it's sudden onset, then it's definitely aconite. If it's heart failure, if the patient is already on heart failure and would complain that I want to spit out something but my sputum is not coming out, and you put a stethoscope, it's completely, there are rattling, rails can be heard, then it is antimtar. If it's a patient who has got high grade fever, irrespective of the cause, maybe typhoid, maybe malaria, maybe any viral fever, and complaining of anxiety in the heart region, then it's Belladonna. If the BP is falling down, the normal blood pressure in an average adult would be 120 by 80. But if it is going down, say 90 systolic by 60 systolic or less than that, then, and along with it, the patient only complains that I'm not feeling heaviness in the chest, I'm not feeling pain in the chest, but I'm only feeling anxiety, then the drug of choice would be Camphor.
Okay.
And the potency should be given as high as possible. I directly give CM potency. I mean, and it's remarkable. Only one or two doses need to be given. And this is a very, very common symptom that occurs with inferior wall myocardial infarction, where the patient does not complain of chest pain, does not complain of choking, but would complain generally of gastritis and an anxiety in the heart region. A very, very common. So Camphor becomes one of the commonest drugs to be used in inferior wall MI.
So let me ask you, in India, they have emergency medicine, the ambulances and stuff like that.
They don't carry, unfortunately, homeopathic medicines. They are not aware, rather they are averse to. But nowadays, since I am propagating it quite widely, at least in places like Nagpur, and people have started using it. But plus, one more important thing is, many of our homeopathic students, they come out of the college and they're working in ICCUs run by allopathic institutes. So there they have a wide variety of chance of using homeopathic drugs to save lives. A simple drug like camphor and carbovich would definitely save life till the patient is brought from the spot of his home or office to the ICCU. That the transit time can be reduced. And India is not such a rich country where every time ambulance is available. So we have got, their own personal vehicles or a public transport system. And that takes a hell lot of time. So the transit time can be saved, the patient's life can be saved with simple drugs like camphor and carbovich when they're specifically indicated. Carbovich is again indicated for anxiety in the chest region, provided the blood pressure has fallen down and there is a slight cyanotic tinge. Now, this particularly happens in congenital cyanotic heart diseases, particularly phallocytology. Phallocytology is a cyanotic heart disease wherein the BP falls down in times of crisis and the patient complains nothing but anxiety in the region, heart region. So a very, very particular drug. The potency used, again, is very high, CM.
And so you have to have the CM potency available. And in America, I don't know how many people have that high a potency
But provided if you know, see, if you know that you can use these, and if you have such a set of patients, the environment is such that you are likely to get situations, it's worthwhile to keep in advance. Or at least not the highest potency available, because 30 or 6 or it would require lots of repetition, and they don't act in such scenarios. So we require high potency. Millisieverts potencies are the best.
Okay, and I wanted to let folks know that on Homeopathy World Community, we have a listing of all the shows that Dr. Adil has done together. And on show number 6, he did one on congenital heart disease. And I think that you did mention the carbovich right there. Okay.
Then there's another wonderful drug called Senkris. Senkris basically is very lesser used remedies. Very few people actually know about this drug, and very few people, at least in India and Indian subcontinent, use this drug. But it's a wonderful, wonderful remedy in case of septicemia, when you have got blood infections. And yes, your antibiotics may be going on in an ICU setting or critical care unit setting up. But the patient that complains, doctor, I'm dying, I don't know, I feel a particular restlessness and anxiety in chest, please help me. In this situation, neither your arsenic is going to work nor your aconite is going to work, but the drug of choice would be Senkris, however rare it is. But Senkris has to be used, only one or two doses, and that entire feeling is gone. The patient feels a sense of great relief, and he or she would really thank you for at least, clearing of that mind for this anxiety.
Can you tell us what is this Senkris?
Senkris is a poison of the snake.
Okay.
So, it's a snake poison, a wonderful remedy. A lesser used remedy in routine practice is not used because it has got very specific indications, like Lachesis and like Crotalus horridus, which are master remedies to be used in many varied conditions. Senkris is the smaller brother or smaller sister of Lachesis and Crotalus horridus. But nonetheless, this particular symptom of anxiety chest in either pneumonia or in typhoid or in high-grade fevers, wherein it is not responding to Belladonna, it would definitely respond to Senkris. Then we have got a drug called Ipecac. Now, the same situation, Antimtat and Ipecac are very, very closely related as far as this anxiety in the heart region is concerned of. Both are excellent remedies for pneumonia. Whatever pneumonia, whether it is a bronchial pneumonia or a lobar pneumonia, that means if the pneumonia settled in a single lobe or it is generalized throughout the lungs, whether it is viral, fungal, bacterial, they are excellent in cleaning up the mnemonic processes, both of the drugs. The criteria for using the remedies, Antimtat has to be used only if the tongue is thickly coated and there is maybe or may not be element of cyanosis, and Ipecac has to be used when the tongue is clean. Antimtat has to be used when there is more thirst. Ipecac is a absolutely thirstless remedy. So, whether or not the patient has got nausea or doesn't have nausea, Ipecac becomes a wonderful remedy for using it in pneumonia.
And we know also of bleeding, right? Ipecac is a good bleeding.
Yeah, ipecac is with bleeding, but not all patients with pneumonia would turn out to have hemoptysis. If you have got hemoptysis, again, it supervenes antemtat in its usage. Again, but here now, ipecac and antemtat both need to be started with low potency, and in, say, 2 or 3 hours or 4 to 5 hours, you can ascend the potency if you see the results. So, wonderful remedies, both ipecac as well as antemtat, very close related, but the indications should be known when to use and when not to be used. Then we have got a drug, phosphorus. Again, a wonderful remedy, phosphorus. But I should caution that phosphorus, again, is a very, very deep-acting drug. So it should be withheld for only for this usage of simple one-line symptom, anxiety region, heart off. We have got other drugs. So phosphorus does not have predominance here. Then we have got theridion. Theridion, another wonderful drug. Again, a lesser-used remedy, spider remedy, theridion. It has got uses, wide uses, but when there's a liver failure patients or pancreatic patients who have got pancreatic cancer or, for that matter, acute pancreatitis, they would complain of pain, that and the pain is about shooting type of pain or a stabbing type of pain, ranging extending right from the epigastrium to the back. But in many pancreatic patients, when the pseudocyst develops, a cyst, that is the collection of water, develops after the episode, then the patient would complain of a different feeling and anxiety in the heart region of, and that is the time when theridion is the drug to be used. Hello.
Yes, yes, you're doing great. I'm just sitting back and listening carefully and learning about the different drugs. And so you're still on the very beginning. You're still on the first page of the rubric,
yeah,
dealing with anxiety.
We have so much discussed each rubric. I mean, just because people would see so many drugs and they would get confused which one to use, and then ultimately close down the repertory, and then they again use the general drugs like aconite and arsenic. So what's the use? What's the use of then calamia and ignatia and ipecac and Senkris? So one should know the use, and they should fit it in their heads, and when the time comes, they should use it properly.
Right, just to memorize everything.
Yeah. So a single rubric, and I can go on for hours, because there are so many drugs, and every drug has got specific indications.
Okay, well, it says in black letters for the phosphorus, excitement aggravates. And what would that mean? What happens, or what kind of excitement?
Both mental and physical excitement, because the phosphorus basically is a hypersensitive person. So the smallest of anxiety, for example, the patient is lying in the ICU in a disturbed state, and suddenly there is an explosion or a loud sound. That much is enough for causing severe anxiety in the heart. But then in this such cases, aconite or arsenic would supervene phosphorus. I would rather withhold phosphorus, because phosphorus is a very deep-acting drug, and I would not want a drug to be repeated again and again of this magnitude. The depth of action of phosphorus far exceeds that of aconite and arsenic or camphor or carbavage.
I see.
Likewise,
so
we have Auramet. Auramet also has got it's a black letter drug here in heart region of. But then it can be given in chronic cases who are not responding to other therapies, only for this want of, this single symptom. Such big drugs should be reserved. I mean, should not be used often.
So does that mean that you might give it one time and alternate, or just give it and give placebo, or with these really deep acting?
I would only give, if my acute drugs are not acting, I would give only a single drug, single dose of, say, phosphorus 1M. If it's, for example, phosphorus has got similar symptoms like arsenic. So if arsenic is not working, I've repeated once, twice, but it's not, I'm not getting results. I would rather give only one dose of phosphorus and then stop. It would do the work.
Okay.
Then we go to another pathological rubric. Then there are so many rubrics. Aphthy of nipples. Aphthy of nipples, it's a self-explanatory thing. Apprehension in the region heart off. Now, apprehension in the region heart off and anxiety. Anxiety region of heart off is a very, very known symptom, apprehension. They look similar, but they are not similar. Apprehension and anxiety are not similar in sense. Apprehension in. Now, when the patient is basically apprehensive, for example, I have to go for an exam. I am apprehensive of what is going to happen. And at that time, I get a particular feeling. See, it's not related to any disease, or it's not related to any organic disease. I am basically apprehensive person. And now I've got an exciting factor. So in apprehension, if I get this feeling, a discomfort feeling of the heart, then those drugs can be used. But then all the drugs are, none of the drugs are given in dark letters. Rustox is one of the drugs. But then, so hence this rubric basically is not used as frequently as that anxiety chest in.
So
then
we've
got another. Apprehension basically is a rubric given. The drugs are given. Natriumur, phosphoric acid, but then they are common proving. Clinically, this rubric is hardly used because it has a better rubric, that is anxiety chest in. So when you come to clinical, although they are not similar more or less, but then since we have got no 3-mark drugs, we have no black letter drugs, we avoid using this rubric very frequently in practice as anxiety chest in as compared to that.
Okay, I wanted to ask just maybe a silly or basic question.
No, none of the questions are silly. Please go on.
When you say apprehension, and we have, this is the chest chapter, so this means that we have this sensation or feeling in this part of our body, in my chest, in my whole, if I say my whole chest, or I direct my hand to a part of my chest, I'm saying I feel this, you know, like some people say I feel butterflies
So you can compare those butterflies with apprehension, but you cannot. Anxiety has a bit deeper connotation. On the face of it, they both look same. Anxiety heart region off and apprehension heart region off. But apprehension is a lighter rubric. Butterflies in chest, yes, I would have. But if they are irritating, then only I would go on for drugs like Orimet and Rustox. Only 2 drugs are given. Rest all are given in 1-mark, so they are not to be used. 2-mark drugs, Orimet and Rustox. But still, you know what? Rustox and Orimet, again, when you read those drugs properly, in all the 4 source books, you will not find apprehension, heart region of, as it is given here in the repertory, you will not find them in the Materia Medica. So it becomes very difficult to use those drugs also for this rubric.
Okay. I'm just trying to get...
You can call this fallacy of the repertory, or you can call this fallacy of the system. Because if a rubric is given and if a drug is given 2 marks, then we should find that symptom in the drug proper when we read the Materia Medica. But when you read the Materia Medica of Rustox, you would not find apprehension heart region off.
Okay, so in other words, almost cross it off in your book.
Yeah, because clinically, it's pointless to be used. It is there in the repertory, yes, we salute it. But when you come to clinics, when you come to patients, I wouldn't use it because it doesn't pay.
Okay.
Then we have got a drug called atelexis. Atelexis basically means collapse.
Okay.
And
are you there? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Collapse. Now, atelexis basically is not a clinical diagnosis. It is more a pathological diagnosis. It's a diagnosis done by x-rays. It can be diagnosed by CT scans of the chest. And it's a very, very common complication after tuberculosis and after many diseases like lung abscess.
We're having a bad connection.
Can't you hear me? Am I audible?
We were having some interference. Okay. I hope we're doing well now. Okay.
So, atelexis basically means the collapse of the lung. And a very, very fairly common situation, although clinically it's not a clinical diagnosis, it's a pathological diagnosis, what we call, or a radiological diagnosis. For example, you can get it on x-ray, you can get it on a CT scan of the chest. Or you can get it on post-mortem when the patient dies and you're opening up the chest, you'll find a collapsed lung. So atelexis basically means collapse. Now, since it's a pathological rubric, still it is given in the rubric of chest and the drug called antemtat is given. Now, how can you suspect that the area of the lung has collapsed? Now, this generally happens if you're dealing with a patient of pneumonia. If the patient pneumonia is there, severe pneumonia, it has crossed, say, 1 month or 1.5 months, still no results are there. it is quite common with HIV patients nowadays. AIDS patients, the pneumonia takes around 1.5 to 2 months if it's a fungal pneumonia. Fungal pneumonia are very difficult to treat. Second, also, we have got renal transplant patients or liver transplant patients who very frequently get pneumonias. In such cases, and their pneumonias last quite long, and long I mean by 2 months, 3 months. So the patient is totally exhausted. But more than that, the area, the good portion of the lung surrounding the pneumonic patch slowly gets fibrosed and collapsed. Now, if you know that this is going to happen, only in such situations are you allowed to use drugs like Antemtat or, for that matter, hyoscyamus. Hyoscyamus, again, atelectasis is not mentioned in hyoscyamus unless in one of the source books, I don't know. But in routine Materia Medica, if you read hyoscyamus, you are not going to get atelectasis. So, but still a wonderful drug, and I have tried it. In such septic states, in such pneumonic states, very low potency, but a frequent repetition, say once or twice a day. And when I say low potency, I would start with as low as hyoscyamus 1C or 2C, or Antemtat 1C or 2C, and slowly ascend up. And it really curtails off the this atelectic process, and it helps to save the normal lung over a period of time. Hello.
Yes, I'm listening.
Yeah.
So we were. I was just sending messages to the folks on the chat about the antimonium tart and the hyoscyamus for this really lung fibrosis, pneumonia, secondary infections, all sorts of things. And it seems as if antimonium tart is one of the very top remedies for all kinds of things going on with the with the heart and lungs.
Since we are talking about antimony tart, I would like to throw light upon one of the very, very important conditions which is very prevalent in West and is not seen in India at all. I mean, I have not seen a single case of cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis would present, and here you would like to use Antemtat or hyoscyamus because you would get atelectasis at a very fast pace. And you may need to use it for as long as, say, a month, an Antemtat. Antemtat in very low potency, decimal scale, so 1x, 2, 3x. You may repeat it once or twice a day, depending upon the situation. And if you're suspecting if the cystic fibrosis has affected your lung tissue, then yes, allopathy, modern medicine, still has got no role. We do have in homeopathy drugs like Antemtat and hyoscyamus. So cystic fibrosis, although not known in India, but few of my friends out there in Israel and UK, they have tried in few patients with cystic fibrosis these two remedies for this symptom, particularly atelectasis. So I am quite glad that they have got good response, although the patients are only one or two. But still, since I don't have my direct experience, cystic fibrosis should be kept in purview when we're dealing with atelectasis.
Okay. I don't see any comments in the chat. If anyone does have a comment or a question, we do welcome you to ask them if you have something that you'd like to know. We're here to answer those questions. So, you know, just tell us, you know, all of the guests, why don't you tell us in the chat where you're coming from? If you're listening in from India, from Canada, from Europe, from the U.S., we'd love to know where our listeners are coming from too.
Actually, here you would require a lot of audience because we would want lots of questions. See, I'm giving what I know, but then I want to know what you want to know. I mean, the audience, because this repertory basically is quite a boring subject, but then it becomes interesting when we relate it with clinics, when we relate it with patients, and we relate it with the need of the hour. There are so many drugs which can be used for particular symptoms for which other therapies do not have drugs.
That's true. So I've never found it to be boring, though.
No, but many of my students complain repertory is the most boring subject for them. So I said, no, we can make it interesting. If you relate all these rubrics, the language of the repertory, and then put it on the patients and combine it with Materia Medica and select each drug and understand them, then this no longer becomes boring. Rather, it becomes so essential that you can, repertorize every single symptom and it make it quite quick, easy to remember also.
Okay, so are we going to go to the next one?
I think we would complete A, because I was thinking of completing the rubric of chess, but now each rubric I'm taking, I have lots and lots of things to discuss. So we would continue this after our holidays of April. We would continue the entire chest once again, full. And if God gives you, God willing, full repertory, each rubric can be discussed, correlated. I can give you examples, live cases. And there are lots of things.
That would be fabulous. And we really do encourage people to send in their questions, because this makes it exciting to have live people knowing that we're getting feedback, that we're being listened to, that this makes a difference in people's lives. That's why we do the show. And, you know, you can keep talking. I've given plenty.
Then
unless
we have got
you
next rubric called Atrophy Mammy. Now,
yeah.
Atrophy basically means a complete loss of. Atrophy means loss. Now, since, and it generally occurs in cancer of the breast. The last stage of cancer of the breast, when the mammy is completely atrophy. Now, at the face of it, if you see the pathological meaning, atrophy means the entire tissue is completely gone. Now, what is left? If there's nothing left of it, then why do you have so many drugs like conium and iodine and kali iode? So, this has to be seen in a broader perspective. There are four stages of cancer of the breast. Stage 1, 2, 3 and 4. The stage 4 is complete metastasis. That means the malignancy of the breast has spread not only to the other breast, but also to the lungs, the liver, and the brain, which is the favorite site. So that is fourth stage. Again, there are 4A and 4B, but I'm not going to go in that. The third stage is spread to the nearest nodes, the internal mammary nodes, which can be clearly seen. So that is stage 3. Stage 2 and stage 1. So stage 1, the patient may just feel a lump, or the patient may feel a lump that is growing, the lump which is fixed, or a lump which is attached to the nipples. Stage 2, the patient may feel pain, as well as there may be ulcer or discharge from the nipple. And stage 3, then all these symptoms plus the nodes surrounding it. So this is roughly, I'm saying, the four stages of cancer breast. Now, where does atrophy? Atrophy comes in last stage. But suppose if you know this patient has an impending atrophy, the patient has already crossed stage 2 and now going to stage 3. From stage 3, the atrophy would start, the breast would start shrinking in size, although it has got a big mass. So the normal tissue would start shrinking in size. And if that does so, then the entire you can't save the breast. The malignancy goes on spreading. So conium, iodine, and kali iode, are the three drugs given. Also drug given is creosote. Now, conium is to be given when there is a painless mass. The mass is not paining. Iodine is to be given, of course, all the three, conium and iodine and kali iode, all have got very hard masses under the breast, mammy. So that is common for all the three. But painlessness is a symptom of conium. Slight pain and spread to the other breast is a symptom of iodine, and kali iode would have got pain with, again, restlessness, apprehension, chest in, and anxiety, chest in. Now, kali iode is generally right side, conium and iodine on the left mammy. Although they are not specifically mentioned in this rubric, but it is comes from the Materia Medica. When there is a discharge, now all these three, conium, iodine, kali iode, would not have discharge from the breast. They would only have painless masses with the normal tissue being puckered in. So you can very well see from the outside itself on the breast examination that the breast tissue is now shrinking, is getting atrophied. Creosote, you will definitely have an offensive discharge from the nipple, or the malignancy would burst out from the breast itself and ulcerate. In such situation, either the discharge may be serous or pustular, but definitely there would be definitely very offensive to the patient and the physician both. And this is the case for creosote. Creosote generally is a second stage remedy after conium has done its job. So this is atrophy mammy. Again, a differentiation from conium and iodine. Generally, atrophy mammary from the center to the periphery, that is first the nipples and then the periphery, would be iodine. and conium would be from the periphery to the center. That means mass occurring at the one of the quadrants of the breast, say upper or lower quadrant, and then slowly and steadily the puckering is spreads to the nipple. In such a case, I would first prefer conium over iodine. And if the puckering starts, if the atrophy starts from the nipple and it progresses to the periphery, then the drug would be iodine. I don't think such finacy of is discussed anywhere. So I would still appeal to the audience that every single rubric can be discussed this way, and they have been done clinically. Debbie, are you there?
Yes, I am. So when we went through the remedies listed for the atrophy of mammae, we have used the black letter.
Yeah.
Remedies, and there are still many others that are listed.
There are drugs like Natremure, Nitric Acid, Nux Moschata, Creosote, and Cecal Cor, but of which we have only used Creosote as an acute remedy because Natremure and Nitric Acid both are constitutional drugs, and if at all we are giving the person the constitutional remedy, then we would think of Natremure, Atacam, or Nitric Acid. Or even for that matter, Nux Moschata. I don't have any experience with Nux Moschata. Neither have seen cases with Nux Moschata, but very much I've seen with conium, iodine, kali iodine, and creosote, very much. So atrophy, mammae, at least these. So Natremure, Atacam, Nitric Acid, and Nux Moschata, we use it only in single dose as a constitutional prescription with atrophy, mammae as one of the symptoms of the entire paraphernalia.
Okay, I find it really very interesting the way that Kent set up the book, the chapters, that within chest, you're looking at all the organs of the chest, whereas in some modern day repertories, we've separated that out to different chapters. That one chapter, like in Murphy's, one chapter might be breast, another might be heart.
Exactly. Okay, and, I mean, it's fine. You have to go with time, so he's done that. But at least he's kept the basis of Ken's repertory intact. He's not changed much.
So it's okay.
Still, I mean, people who are used to using, for example, we are all Kentian prescribers, and we extensively use Ken's repertory here in India. So it's very easy for us to relate to Murphy's repertory also.
Okay.
Then there's a very lesser known drug, chimophilia. That's atrophy mammae. And you have got CHIM. Quite a small remedy, chimophilia. In this, apart from when the atrophy and malignant mass becomes very painful, and the pain is not of a burning pain type, it's just a particular heaviness in that area. And the patient says, no, I have pain, but it's not that pain of a burning type of pain. See, a burning type of pain of cancer breast, which is of particular left side, is Asteris rubens. Asteris rubens is a master remedy for any sort of pain because of any reason arising in the left breast or even in the right breast. It works equally well. But then chimophilia is a small remedy for the particular heaviness in the chest. Now, this heaviness may not be related to cancer alone. It is also given in atrophy of the mammae, but it produces a peculiar sign, a type of heaviness, which is quite often seen in multiple masses of the breast, fibroadenosis, what we call, not fibroadenoma. Fibroadenoma is a single node or single mass. Fibroadenosis is a multiple masses in which the breast becomes quite painful as a whole, at the single breast or both breasts, at the turn of every menses. In this case, the breasts initially enlarge in size, and then they keep on go on reducing as the flow of the menses starts. In such situation, you can use drug like chimophilia. Again, a very lesser used drug, but then this is the indication of chimophilia, CHIM.
Where did you ever use this one?
I have not used I don't get gynec patients, but my mother, she's a gynecologist, and she uses this drug, and that's how I get this information, this knowledge of using, because we keep on frequently discussing. Every Saturday we have a clinical meeting, and she keeps on presenting cases, and that's why we come to know.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was the other question that I had, because you're very familiar with all the different remedies and you have such a great knowledge about cancer drugs and stuff, and I don't think of cardiology as dealing with all these other kinds of diseases, but you seem to have so many experiences and knowledge of that.
Well, I'm a physician first. I mean, and a physician always should have complete knowledge about everything. Whether one wants to use it or not use it, that's a different thing. It's a totally different thing. But then not having knowledge would be, that should not be the case. And luckily, here in our academy, the National Academy of Homeopathy, every Saturday we are so open-minded. We come together, discuss our cases, discuss our fallacies, where we have gone wrong, which drug, how. So, smallest of small drugs come in picture. We learn so many things. We share. Although my father, my mother, my wife, she's a pediatrician, homeopathic pediatrician. So we all share, and then there are so many other people. We have lots of students also, about 25, 30 people. We have a group here, and it's a lovely time. We discuss small things, share our experiences, and grow. We evolve as homeopaths.
I think I've heard some time ago that just because a remedy may be a small remedy in the books, in the repertory, that as time goes on and we learn more about the way that medicine works, that they might become more widely used or even a polycraft.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the other day we were discussing about a simple drug like Ruta. Now, Ruta is a drug which is so often used in arthritis and rheumatism. It's a lesser used drug, and what one would not imagine it using it in heart attacks. I would not imagine using it in angina. And I've used in n number of patients a simple drug, Ruta, and the angina is subsided. So, for me, Ruta has become a very big drug. For me, Ruta is an important drug. I cannot let it just pass by as any other drug, like just because it's partially proved drug. No. Same way with ranunculosis bulbosus. Ranunculosis bulbosus is a very small drug, but it's an excellent drug for angina, classical angina pectoris. If arnica fails, then we have got ranunculosis bulbosus, which equally has a very good effect on angina. So such drugs, if they are used again and again in different perspectives, then it adds to the clinical provings and it makes a small drug bigger. So no drug is bigger or small just because it's given in 2 marks or 3 marks in the repertory. But it totally depends upon the clinical usage.
And in your own repertory, you must have a way of adding knowledge and your experience so that when you look it up in your own repertory, you do see Ruta or Ranunculus. Is that bulbous? Is that what the one you use?
Exactly.
In the Pulsatilla family?
Many of my students ask me, sir, what is the best repertory? Which one is the best repertory according to you? Morphy's repertory, or should we use Boric's repertory, or should we use Ken's repertory or Boninghausen's repertory? I said, the repertory which you prepare yourself, that is the best repertory. If you are able to pick out rubrics at the spur of the moment, then that repertory has served its purpose and is best for you. So you have to actually converse with the repertory. You have to be in with the repertory. Day in and day out, you have to actually just browse through the rubrics and ponder upon them if you've got time. It really pays.
So not only are humans dynamic and homeopathy dynamic, but our repertory is dynamic. It's always growing and as we learn and work with the medicines.
Yeah, because it's not always that Materia Medica, you can keep on reading Materia Medica and memorize it. It's becomes quite difficult. You can have drug pictures, you can have drug portraits, but then repertory really helps to get into that nitty-gritty, the small aspects of Materia Medica or the drugs, and even the diseases, which are very, very essential in when you deal with patients, because here a physician is there, and as a physician, you cannot say that I don't know a particular thing and I don't know this and I do this. You have to keep yourself aside and see the patients first. And homeopathy ultimately is a holistic science. So whatever thing may be, you have to be trying to perfect yourself. At least follow Hahnemann in that respect. Hahnemann had perfected not only his books but himself, his thought structure, right from 1810, the first edition of the Organon, to 1827, again to 1833. The different editions of Organon were nothing but evolution, self-evolution, along with his colleagues. So same way we have to follow and keep on evolving, and repertory is a very, very good method of evolving ourselves.
Well, thank you for a little bit of philosophy and understanding. For the folks who are listening, sometimes we have a professional homeopath listening in, and other times we just have people coming in from Twitter or Facebook who are interested in their health, who have concerns about their family or their self and their health. Particularly on this show, we talk about the heart and how to keep it healthy and without taking drugs if we can. We have gone through the repertory in Kent's repertory, the chest chapter, the letter A, and I wanted to know, the next time I guess we could start up the letter B.
Yeah, well, we would first revise it with, we revise the A and then start with B.
Okay.
Because it would be a long time, it would be say a fortnight or more before we meet again.
Right, so you're going to be at your clinic or at doing classes for the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, for the next couple of weeks, right, from 1st of April to 22nd of April, we have got our postgraduate homeopathic classes where about we are having not less than 38 students throughout the world. They're coming, and we're having lots of discussions this way, discussing each rubric, each drug, right from morning 5 o'clock. We start with yoga, then we start with different asanas and tell them which yoga to be done, when, how do they tell their patients to use them. And then we start with clinical cases. We have about 200 cases a day, and each case is discussed at length as much as possible. The method of case taking, the method of taking the mental generals, the physical generals, how to analyze them, how to give doses, which drug to select, how to repertorize. Why not this drug? When to drug? When to stop the dosage? Every small stuff. Then we have got emergencies. We have got pre-operative and post-operative homeopathic therapy. Labor, if we have patients, there are so many females who are undergoing labor. How to pulsatilla? Actually, giving pulsatilla and seeing whether it's acting or not, whether the pains are increasing or not, whether the cervical dilatation is taking place or not with gelsemium or with colophyllum. And if one is failing, what to do, which potency to repeat. All these are very technical things, and then you need to be learned when the thing is in practice. You just can't read it. So,
yes. These are live. These for the folks who are able to attend, we'll think about sending this information for folks to attend next year and sign up with you and contact you so that they can learn in this wonderful group of people. 200 cases a day, that is a lot.
We really, it would seem quite odd, but then we do have, lots of cases. All our, all our OPDs, all our members, they bring cases, they discuss their faults. See, it's very easy to discuss your successes, how I did this, but it's very difficult to discuss your own faults. And once you discuss your own faults, if you have that openness, it is not only a learning for yourself, but it's also learning for others. Mistakes should become the stepping stone for success, not only for yourself, but for others. And here, luckily, touch wood, you have such an open group. We are not closed. We don't have secrets. Please come and share. Give us a chance to learn from you, and you take a chance. It's just a get-together, just to evolve. God has given us chance, things which I know, tomorrow probably I may die. I don't want to die with it. I take my knowledge with me. I want to share it as much as possible.
So when we present things that didn't work, we have a little bit of humility and we say, okay, we'll learn from that. I opened the show letting people know that they could find your website, www.homeoacad.org, HOMEOACAD.org. And they could also find you, Dr. Adil, on Facebook, or they can contact me at homeopathyworldcommunity@gmail.com. You can ask us questions, send in your comments. We would love to know if you're enjoying these shows, if these are beneficial, if you would like more of them, if you have topics of interest that you would like us to talk about.
Secondly, I would also welcome positive criticisms. If you don't like the show, tell us that why don't you like the show? It's not always good things. I would want bad things also to come up. So at least it's for my own improvement. I'm doing this for my improvement first.
Yes. Well, I'm always learning. I think the show is great with you. I love doing it. Even my ears are getting attuned to the accent so that I really understand what you're saying without having to kind of translate in my own head. And the only thing I would say is sometimes you get so excited that you talk very quickly. And yeah. Then I would say slow down just a little bit, especially for anybody who might be taking notes. We do post the archives of the show on homeopathyworldcommunity.com. So you can find it by clicking on the little picture of Dr. Adil on the right-hand column. And we also request that if you love the show, make it a favorite, get reminders, tweet it to other folks, put it on your Facebook. You can embed the show right onto your website so people can gain the knowledge. Don't keep it to yourself. Spread this word because we are learning together. And I want to thank you so much. I wish you the best of health and good luck in this coming month. It's springtime here. Everything is blooming. And we're going to get back on the shows with you. That's Wednesday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, USA, with Dr. Adil. When did you say the next session would be? In April?
After 22nd. That is the Wednesday after 22nd, whichever day I am.
Okay. So the Wednesday would be April 25th?
Yeah, 25th April.
So the last week in April, we will be together. And besides this particular show, we also have Monday nights with Grant Bentley doing facial analysis. Tomorrow's show at 11 a.m. with Dr. Christina Chambreau, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, talking about pet health. Wonderful show. And then following that at noon is Alan Phillips, attorney at law, talking about vaccinations and your rights. And also we have a brand new show for anybody who can listen or watch the archive podcast. We are now doing a live video stream on Monday morning at 11 a.m., the same time comparable to the time that we have our Wednesday show. So it's 11 a.m., and go on to the front page of Homeopathy World Community to learn more about how you can participate in that show. So we're ending today's show. I want to thank you again so much, and we will see you at the end of April.
Sure. God bless you, and God bless everyone out there.
And happy Easter, happy Passover, whatever holidays you are celebrating in the coming weeks.
Thank you. Thank you. Same to you.
Okay.
Good night. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.